Gavlik, who's unmarked as he streaks away into an open goal.
Hit the boundary line.
Well, the post is broken. Matthews hit it.
Boy, oh boy, wowee.
He shoots towards goal. What more can you say?
This is the Super Footy Podcast.
Hello and welcome to the Round 9 edition of the Super Footy Podcast. My name is Lauren Wood. I am your host. We've got so much to cover today, the good, the bad and the ugly of Round 8. There's so much there. We've got post-climbing, we've got pitiful and promising performances, and we've also, of course, got pronunciation high on the agenda. We'll have a very special guest too a little bit later on, so make sure you stick around for that. I'm joined, as I am every week, by Herald Sun chief football writer Mark Robinson. Robbo,
hello. Welcome. Hello, Lauren, and you pronounced my surname correctly. Thank you.
Good to hear. John Anderson, colleague at the Herald Sun. We got that correct?
Jonathan is the...
Lauren. It's Jonathan.
Yeah. Now, how you going, Lauren?
I'm well, thank you. We've very excitingly added to our niece collection overnight, so we're building a little bit of an AFLW troop. So good news there. Can't wait to meet Ailey a little bit later today. And fantastic, as always, to be joined by BT, Brian Taylor, who's been at the centre of the controversy all weekend. Brian, it's great to have you with us.
Hello, Lauren. Been no controversy, so just a good round of footy again.
It certainly was. We'll get to that a little bit later on, but we'll kick things off with the good, the bad and the ugly. The good, let's start with the positive this week. Why not? We're always smashing people here, there and everywhere across the AFL industry, but the good, Jarman Impey, wasn't that an absolute masterstroke? I know you were at that game on the weekend, BT. Moving him forward, I mean, Clarkson, he's been known for his masterstrokes over the years, but it was a great one, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was. He was good, but the team were even better the way they carried it. It reminded me of that premiership. Was it 2008 they won with Clarko's cluster and the whole dynamics around that? That game had that written all over it, and it sort of came out of the blue because everyone, you know, with the new rules and sort of things happening, and, you know, people had been scoring fairly easily. The ball had been zipping from one end to the other, and then all of a sudden you get a game that is a full-on squash at one end of the ground. The game was played in Hawthorn's forward half, and, you know, it was just amazing coaching. Not great for the game, not great for the spectators, but a great way for Alistair Clarkson to eke out a win.
It certainly was. And Ando, we've spoken a lot about the Blues over the last couple of weeks in particular here on Super Footy Podcast. And one player who we spoke about a few weeks ago was Jack Silvani. And while the Blues went down to Collingwood on the weekend, he really took another step forward, didn't he, Jack?
Yeah, I think Robbo identified him 3 weeks ago after his first game back. He was extremely frustrated playing the VFL. He was playing consistently well in the VFL. Got his chance, took it, was okay the second week, good, better again last week. And look, Jack, I think most of us, I can say this, one of my boys knows Jack a bit and was out with him a couple of Sundays ago. Jack Silvani has more pressure on him than most footballers do. And that comes with being a third generation, great story that he is. And I feel for him. I don't think footy's always easy for Jack. He's a good young fella. He's making his way in the game. And I'm sure everyone would be rapt if Jack Silvani makes it as a footballer.
Oh, I think he's on his way. He's played 46 games now from a pick 53. You'll take that any day from a pick 53. And he's no longer a boy. He's grown into be a man. His physique is a hell of a lot better than it has been in the last 2 years. Naturally, he's bigger and he's getting more confidence. Nah, that's a good one. My good from the weekend was Richmond. I thought Richmond's performance on Sunday afternoon in the late game at Optus was vintage Richmond, if we can say that. The game moves really quickly, but it was...
Is it vintage if it was only 2 years ago? Well, it is now.
BT liked vintage Hawks. I liked the vintage Tigers. They were high pressure. They were quick. They left Fremantle in their wake, and really disappointing.
And be remiss of us too, as we sit here, the time of recording, mentioning Richmond, Sean Grigg has just announced his retirement, effective immediately, of course. Premiership ruckman in the end, wasn't he, BT and Ando?
What height Sean Grigg? Is he 188, 189?
188 springs to mind.
So when you try and find a ruckman in the past who was that short, if you like, you end up going back to the 70s when John Nichols or someone was 190 or whatever.
Luke Beveridge started that. Luke Beveridge started with the smaller ruckman. Damien Hardwick latched onto it, used Grigg. Grigg was a really interesting player. He was traded to Richmond in exchange for Andrew Collins, and there might have been a couple of knife sets in there as well. I can't remember exactly. But Grigg was one of those players who, I haven't got the stats in front of me, but I wouldn't be surprised if I looked it up. In the last 6 years, he's averaged 20 and a half possessions. Now, when Richmond were struggling, they'd say, we've got to get more out of Grigg. When Richmond became a very good side, they'd say, God, how solid is Sean Grigg? He just turns up every week and does his role.
Why did Carlton trade him up? My understanding is that he was perceived by Richmond to be a player who, a role player, as you just said, Robbo. Andrew Collins was a really good kick, and Carlton won a really good kick. They didn't think Sean Grigg was a great kick, so they were happy to part with him. That was the talk at the time.
Well, as we know, and Brian, you would have played with a lot of people who can't kick, but they've got other values.
He could kick all right, though.
He could kick all right. He could kick all right, but he was a very smart footballer. I asked Jack Riewoldt one day last year, I said, who are the smarter players at the club? And he said, oh, Grigger. He's just a very smart footballer.
Yep, and effective immediately. So you'd think that now opens up a spot for Richmond at the mid-season draft, which is upcoming. We know Sam Lawson is on their radar. So we'll stay tuned for that one. But a magnificent career from Sean Grigg across two clubs. But the bad boys, you'd have to say Bombers. They're well and truly back on the bad list. Ando, shaking your head in support? Or?
Well, I'm not shaking a post, as Dane Ramby claimed that he wasn't trying to do. But they got beaten by a kick. They had a shot that could have won, I mean, an unlikely shot, but I would have thought GWS were the bad of the weekend. I've seen...
It was astounding, wasn't it?
There's been how many games this year? 8, 9 to 72. 72 matches. That's the worst single performance. I don't know what you... Did you see that game, Vaz? You did, didn't you? You called it.
Yes. Yeah, no, I didn't call it, but I did see it, and I watched it with great interest. It was pretty ordinary, yeah.
Yeah, I can't think of a worse... I mean, expectation. And this is a side that had been to Victoria earlier this year and gone down to Geelong and beaten Geelong. So we're talking, I know the MCG is a different ground, and that's supposedly their hoodoo ground. They played an absolute load of crap on the weekend.
In front of
Shane, they embarrassed themselves.
In front of one of the worst crowds.
Yeah, the crowd doesn't worry me. The football was a concern. It was really interesting. It was highlighted during the week, the strategies that they went in with of playing spatial defence and giving room to Hawthorn, and they used it 130-odd marks in a game of football. It's an enormous amount of ownership of the pill. And they just couldn't get the ball off Hawthorn. And when they did, Hawthorn smothered them. So they were really poor. But back to the Bombers. They play Fremantle this week. This is season-defining. I know we say that a lot. They're 3-5. They'll go 3-6 if they lose. People are looking at Essendon now and they are asking, who are you as a football team? 2 weeks ago, they pushed Collingwood at the MCG on Anzac Day in one of the great games of the year. It was fiercely contested. But since then, Essendon have dropped away in that area. They are an average team. They're a below-average team, actually.
Well, I think they're a bit of a one-trick pony. I watched the Geelong game and the Collingwood game and the weekend. If you cut off their run off half-back, which is... McKenna and Andy McGrath at times when he's there.
And Sheehan
and Sard.
And they tagged Dylan.
Yeah, there's not a lot else. There's no much of a B plan there.
I still reckon when they get to the bye, it looks like they'll be around about 6-5, somewhere like that, 5-6. So that's still not a bad effort for them. You look at their next three games, Fremantle, Richmond, Carlton. And I know Fremantle travelling along okay at the moment. They're probably not going to beat Richmond, but certainly capable of beating Carlton and maybe Fremantle. So is it that bad for them at the halfway point? They won 12 games last year. What do we expect they'd win this year?
You mentioned Carlton. You think of Essendon and Carlton. Go back in the last 15 years, what have those two clubs done in terms of success in the AFL? Robbo put it out better than me. How many finals between them?
None.
Yep.
Carlton would have
won by default.
Yeah.
No. Ratton took them over.
Yeah. So, handful of finals.
West Coast. Yeah.
When was the last time Bombers were in the finals?
2004, I think it was.
2004. These are two clubs have this incredible rivalry.
Yeah.
Which about rivalries. Well, don't worry. Essendon people hate Carlton. Yeah. Carlton people hate Essendon. But not so much now because there's nothing to hate.
Essendon lose to Fremantle and then they lose to Richmond, that'll make them 3-7. That Carlton game, I think that will have an enormous impact at the football club.
Long way back from 3-7.
They're not coming back. They're not coming back from 3-7. And if this is another failed year, it is incumbent on the Essendon board to look at all aspects of the football department, including the coach. And this is if it continues to go this way. It can turn. We know it can turn. But if it continues to go this way, where Essendon are inconsistent, the club unquestionably has to look at the coach and other football appointments there.
Well, safe to say, if they continue, as you say, on this downward trajectory, they'll be into the ugly category. You'd have to say that the Dane Rampy saga sits well and truly in the ugly category, wouldn't you, Brian? I know you had Friday night off and watched the game at home, but have you ever climbed a post?
I could not believe it. I've never climbed up a post. I've shaken a post before, but I've never climbed up a post. And for those out there, and I've heard some try and get him out of this by saying he didn't shake it. Well, I'm sorry, but as a result of climbing the post, it shook and shook quite obviously. And this is a rule. It's black and white in the rules. If you shake the post, it is a free kick. For Gillon McLachlan to come out on the weekend and say that he was happy with the decision and that the crowd and all supporters would have gone berserk if that game had been won as a result of there being a free kick. I'm sorry, but there's no room for that interpretation. The free kick was there for the nonsense that the kick didn't make the distance, didn't have any effect on the game. Of course it didn't have any effect on the game, but the rule's there. He was lining up for a goal. Who's to say that the shaking of that post, even though he was a long way out, didn't put him off and made him kick poorly? Now, I'm sure that's not the case, but who was to say that? So to say that it had no bearing on the kick is absolute and utter nonsense. This is a debacle. Why have the rule?
Every football code in the world has sticks or of some description, whether it be rugby league, rugby union, Gaelic footy, gridiron, soccer, they all have them. I can guarantee if someone tried to climb up one of those posts, it would be, they must look at us and laugh. They must think, they play this funny game in Australia where blokes climb up the post and they're not penalised for it.
Professional. Okay. Where does it say in the rules that it didn't have any effect on the game, so therefore it's not a free kick?
Well, this is where...
So if there's a player that gives away a 50-metre penalty and doesn't have any effect on the game or doesn't have any effect on the result, is that not a 50?
Mm. Well, this is where, isn't it, that, Robbo, it becomes, and this leads us beautifully into our issues of the week. The actual act of the post climbing aside, yes, Dane Rampy did what he did. He's apologised. He's probably, as we sit here recording today, going to be fined for it today. Hasn't as yet.
Misconduct.
Under conduct unbecoming towards the game. But the wider issue here, is it not, is the AFL's handling of this.
The AFL, if we're here at South Bank, if I walked outside now and we went up to 100 people and said, how do you think the AFL is going right now? I would think that 95% of them would say shit house.
What, based on recent events? Rampy type situation.
The way it was handled.
Yeah.
I mean, the fact that this happened on Friday and he's going to, was it conduct unbecoming on the Tuesday? I wrote on Monday, I think the AFL has failed the game, and I absolutely stand by it. And the further it goes on, the amount of people have rang me in the game saying this is just ridiculous, absolutely ridiculous. The AFL's in a bit of a mess at the moment. You know, there's a 666 kerfuffle. We've got coaches coming out talking about them. Steve Hocking said a month ago, I'm really excited about what strategies the coaches are going to employ to make the scoring better. It hasn't happened. Actually, in fact, the coaches are going negative, more defensive. Let's keep the ball in our hands, which is stifling goal kicking.
When you say kerfuffle, the thing I look at the AFL and say there's a lack of consistency at times. I don't know which way they're going to go with decisions, and that is consistent with lack of consistency without.
Gil McLachlan, when he hit the radio boxes on Saturday,
yep,
had not seen the footage.
That's remarkable. There's someone around Gil McLachlan. If he hadn't, he has to have seen it.
He was shown
decision had gone the other way, if they had paid the free, I reckon the AFL would have come out and defended it they did.
I reckon you're right.
No doubt about that, Brian. Yeah. No doubt about that. And a couple of colleagues of mine are saying, there would have been an enormous furor if they paid that free kick. And I said, well, so what? If it's right, you've got to pay it. And once everyone saw the footage, they'd say, it's okay. You're not allowed to do that, Dane. You just cost your team the game, and what annoys people, I think, and that's a generalisation. What annoys me is the AFL never admit they got it wrong.
Never.
No, I agree.
When they say about the ticking it off, they kind of, we've become accustomed to think, well, of course they had to tick it off because that's where we've ended up.
But if Gillen came out on Saturday and said, you know what, guys, we all have our game and we all make mistakes and we think the umpire made a mistake last night.
Yeah, yeah, but Robert, you hadn't seen it.
No, because he was shown outside.
But that's a lack of professionalism, both on his behalf and on those who work around him.
I'll double-check this. I'll tell you exactly what happened. He said, oh, when David Myers kicked the ball, he was down. And 3OW boys said, no. And he goes, yeah, no, he was down. So they showed him the footage. Said, look. So he walked in thinking that Rampy had climbed up, got back down, and then David Myers kicked the ball. And if you watch the replay, which we've all done, the ball's in the air and Rampy's still on the post. So he hadn't even it's incredible, Brian. It really is an incredible decision.
Yeah, it is. How he couldn't be briefed on that and then to go and defend it having not seen the vision. I didn't know that, Robbo. So he came to our box shortly after that as well.
I'll just double take on that. He was shown the footage on Saturday because he believed that the kick had been Rampy was down from the post, okay? And when they showed him.
Yeah. Yeah. More widely, Ando, this whole, you know, interpretation of rules, you know, we all have a printout on our desks of the laws of Australian football. That you know, the big thick document that comes from the AFL every year, that they're laws and these are the rules. And then we're hearing that, well, they're not actually rules, they're guidelines.
Hardest game to adjudicate of any footy card.
It is,
100%. We accept that, a 360-degree game. Soccer's got offside at times. They have and goal line decisions, but they've got rid of those now.
Yep.
They've got replays in. Look, AFL, I do feel for umpires, but we do make it up as we go along at times. There's no choice.
Sometimes it's a warning about the 666, and we know they get one, and then they pay the free kick. But, Robbo,
I don't understand that.
Neither do I.
Exactly. It's a rule or it's not.
I've heard Brian say it often enough on air. They know the players. They're bad luck.
And Essendon asked the question, didn't they, Robbo?
Essendon spoke to
Where are we at with the application of rules?
Yeah. Hey, Lauren, on the weekend as well, I don't know whether you saw the Hawthorn game, they did it deliberately two or three times. When they realised that they weren't quite sure what they were going to go with next, they quickly put an extra in defence. I think Hawthorn did it once and I think the Bombers did it once. Both did it in a professional sense, deliberately held up the game by having one person in the zone that they weren't supposed to. And I just think, why? Why the warning?
Yeah, it's funny. We all laugh at say a barbecue or something. We talk about footy and we talk about players. And by the end of every discussion, someone in my group will say, geez, we've got a pretty unique game, haven't we? And I say, absolutely we have. Just what you were talking about there, Ando, being a 360 game. We've got rules upon rules. We've got layers of interpretation under rules. It is very, very unique. But what happened on Friday night was more than unique. It was unsporting by Dane Rampy. It was unsporting. And the AFL have an opportunity to show leadership, and they didn't.
And I think they'll take the way he spoke to umpire Jacob Mollison as seriously, if not more seriously, than the post-climbing.
That
was the big issue yesterday.
I was at the AFL 4 weeks ago, and Steve Hocking, the head of football, spoke to us on the record about we want to change the attitudes towards umpires. You know, that I'm sure Brian Seven might have even spoken to the commentators, because the AFL like to get their message through media. Just ease up on the umpires. Stop bashing the umpires. We're losing umpires. And so as soon as Dane Rampy said what he said, the AFL was always going to come down. And so they should. And it's not the end of the world what he said. But we've got to
do it quicker. Do it Saturday.
They ticked everything off on Saturday.
It got taken away from Michael Christian and given to the Football Operations Department. But
the Dane Rampy insult to the umpire should have been dealt with
clear as day.
24 hours.
It's on tape. We've all seen it all over Twitter machine. Friday night, deal with it. Couldn't agree more. On Michael Christian, where you talk about confusion, Ando, is there confusion still around the MRO, Gary Ablett, Nat Fyfe, etc.?
Just quickly go back to that. The longer you let it linger, the worse it looks for the AFL.
Yep.
If they acted decisively with Dane Rampy straight away, I tell you what, they don't get good PR advice. I'll give you the tip now. whoever's giving it to them should look it for a new job because they ain't doing too well.
Mm.
Back to Michael Christian. Michael with Gary Ablett. My view on that, and I spoke to Rubbo off here before, I don't think Michael Christian wanted to go through the whole saga again where he put him up and then he goes to the tribunal and gets off. But it becomes farcical. He had an out because Sam Wright wasn't as injured yep. as Dylan Shield appeared to be.
You spoke about consistency before, and that's yep. exactly what should have happened because this is almost identical to last week. So how can last week's incident result in him having to go and defend and this week it doesn't?
Well, Dylan Shield was knocked to the ground. Sam Wright wasn't. And but against that, the ball had left Sam Wright well before Gary yes. got there. It was, so in some ways it was worse. In other ways, the impact wasn't as great. Mm-hmm. But look, you're right. They look very, very similar. And what Gary was thinking of, I don't know.
I don't know what Nathan Fyfe was thinking. I know what he's thinking right now. how lucky am I?
Yeah.
Yes.
What, BT, if you were MRO, what would you have done with Gary Ablett and Nathan Fyfe?
Well, I thought Fife's was a little worse than Ablett's. I think Fife's, I probably would have given him a week. Gaz, he was very lucky. I know he's silly to do it 2 weeks in a row, but you don't think about that when you're doing it. I thought it was almost identical to last week, and if he got off last week, he should get off this week. But then you throw in the third of the third of those guys, and you see the Sam Durden incident, and you go, "Gee, that was just a bump and accidental head contact," and he's out. Oh, it's weird. I don't get it.
But that rule was changed last year because of the uproar after the, I think it was the Ryan Burton, Sean.
I know, but my point there, Robbo, is accidental head contact. Yes, it was changed last year, and we all know that. But you weigh that up against Ablett and Fyfe, which one's worse?
Oh, no, there's no question. You don't even have to answer that question.
Yeah.
One was a legitimate act of Shepherd, and it was an accidental head clash. I'm struggling to get my head around. I gave Gary Ablett the benefit of the doubt last week. Righto, Gary, you're late. Okay, you're protecting yourself. Mate, he's got to stop protecting himself by hurting the opposition and by jumping in the air. There's a couple of acts on the field, okay, and we've all played. Lauren and you, including you, we've all played.
In the driveway a bit.
So when someone comes at you, Brian, there's got to be a show of faith that there's going to be, might be a collision. Don't raise your forearm. Don't raise your elbow. And it used to happen all the time. Gazza, twice in 2 weeks, has taken the cheap and easy option of, okay, we can meet here, we can bump here, or I can jump off the ground and put my forearm. Now, Geelong argued it was a bumper bar to the chest and it slipped up. He's got a bad technique. Gazza, I've seen Gazza whirl out of packs, right? With 18 players around him. I've seen him crawl through people's legs. I see Gary Ablett kick goals from the fourth deck of grandstands. Gary Ablett knows what he's doing all the time. He's jumping in the air and his forearms are hitting people in the face.
Now, Brian.
Can
we talk about this once and for all? I know you spoke briefly about it on the weekend, but Orazio Fantasia, and I say Fantasia because he spoke outside Scans on Monday morning, he said this: he cleared this up with you. Can you please enlighten us?
Look, Lauren, I'll say one thing only. This is just unbelievable. But this was cleared up a couple of years ago. Orazio and I have spoken a number of times about this, and so I had no doubt that the way I was pronouncing it was correct, and he was happy with it, and he wasn't disrespected by the way that I did it. Full stop. Funny that I was the only person that bothered to speak to him. And that's why I knew that my pronunciation was not being disrespectful at all. So that's all I want to say. And for all those people out there pushing and prodding and having their two bobs worth, perhaps you should actually speak to the person first.
He's vindicated the big one. I'm not here to defend Brian. He can do that himself. But a few lined up to have a crack, including Minister and Martin Bakula, a couple of our opposition journos, Michael Gleeson, Daniel Journey, were very strong on it. Probably, as Brian just said before, ringing Orazio and finding out whether it was Fantasia or Fantasia. And that began on Friday night when Basil and I think it was Hamish were calling. Dyson Heppel said it, then they made a really big thing of it. As don't worry, Brian would have done the same thing if the boot was on the other foot. So don't think that those two were out of place. But this time I have to back you. You've been proven right. and you must feel quite vindicated.
I'm just ready to move on.
You're smiling. Hang on.
I've got to have one. I've got to have one question. I actually missed you on Friday night, Brian. I did. It's a nice hook on Friday night when you're commentating, and when you weren't there, you think, oh, well, this is a bit different. When they started saying Fantasy or whatever it was, and it was announced, I thought to myself, Brian, if you were in the box, now this is a question, if you were in the box on Friday night, you would have continued to call it Fantasia, and would that have caused a ruction? Yeah. Would you have been tapped on the shoulder? How would that have played out?
I don't know, but I'd spoken to him previously, and so as I've said all along, Fantasia was the interpretation that he was happy with, and you know, that's what I would have gone with.
End of the story. I don't think he wants to talk about it anymore, the big bloke.
Do you want to talk about it anymore, Brian?
I don't think he does.
Brian?
No, Brian's
still there, Brian.
I don't think I need to. And if anyone does want to know, just ask him.
One last serious question, okay? One last. And I know you don't want it, Brian, but, oh, well, that's life. When you said, well, bad luck, we're in Australia now, I thought to myself, geez, that's a strong comment. Tell us, did you think that might have got some recourse for you or what? Or clearly that's how you felt. But when I heard that, I thought, oh, yeah, that's interesting.
We were in a conversation full of laughs, full of barbing at each other, full of taking the P1SS out of each other. It was said in that context, and that was the context in which it was meant, not the black and white context in which it was written later.
Like, this is like talking to a losing coach. You go around in about four different ways to try to get an answer and you're just spitting out the same answer.
All right, the full stop is on it. It's time to find out from you guys who needs to lift their game.
Don't look at me like that. How many kicks have you got? That's the answer to everything. Possessions. You give me possessions and I'll shut up.
Righto, Robbo, kick us off. First time, new segment, you're heading north.
Oh, there's two players in my thinking this year who have dropped considerably from last year. One's Tom McDonald and the other one's Cam Rayner. McDonald's a seasoned person and I'm probably taking an easy shot at Cam Rayner, but we saw so much of his talent last year and he played forward 50 last year. And you think, well, he'll get fitter, he'll get stronger. Not that he'll get stronger, he's already a strong bugger, but he'll naturally get stronger. He'll get fitter. He'll get more more game fitness, so he'll last longer in games. He'll start playing a little bit of midfield. But that hasn't happened. And at round eight, it's quite incredible. Next time I talk to Chris Fagan, the coach of the Brisbane, I'm going to ask him about his thinking around Cam Rayner, because he keeps playing him. We know what he thinks of him. But Cam Rayner is having a really down year compared to last year. And I honestly don't know what's wrong. And, yeah, he's mine. He's mine.
Cam Rayner's young, Robbo, and so I give him a little bit of slack. But this guy here, Kieran Jack from Sydney, I don't give as much slack. On the back of an average year last year, the last two games he has had 7 and 8 possessions over the last 2 weeks. So you've got to say that with the young group of players that Sydney have elected to play now, and they've got a lot waiting for more games to come back into the side, that I reckon he, being one of the elder statesmen, would be under serious pressure at the moment.
I think he's finished. I honestly do. He's been a warrior. He's played his 250th game, 2 weeks ago. The way he's played, he's battered, absolutely battered. So I don't know if we've got much left in Kieran Jack.
I agree.
And we're going to Dylan Scheel. It's quite a simple one. He picked the wrong club. Dylan Scheel should be playing with Carlton, not Essendon. And the reason he should be playing with Carlton is because he would be playing alongside Patrick Cripps. And that 1-2 would be as good as it got probably in the AFL, because Scheel would complement the inner work and the quick hands of Cripps.
Better on the outside, you reckon?
I think he's a lot better outside player. He can win his own ball. There's no worries with him there, but at Greater Western Sydney, Bargie, he had a group of them, a nucleus around him. Callum Ward was there, Camellia was there, Whitfield was there, Kelly was there. It's very different where he is now at Essendon. He doesn't have those players around him. He's been tagged now. He's had two games where he's been best of field, no problems at all. So he's played two really good games out of eight. He's played two others where I would have him in the best four, five, And he's had some others where his disposal's been questioned, I suppose. Not his ball winning, his disposal.
And rightly so.
He would admit that. But I reckon privately, and I don't know this for sure, but I would just about back it in that he would be questioning his choice of club.
I have been told that as well. But when you're playing an inconsistent team like Essendon, these sort of thoughts would come into your head. Essendon's issue is, their identity gets stopped, which is their run, and they don't know what to do. And B, where are their leaders? Like, are their leaders inside midfielders? Are their leaders, and Heppel is, he's an inside player, but most of their best players are outside players. Outside. A lot of teams are good players, and they're...
Michael Hurley, to me, is a leader.
Yes, he is.
Michael Hurley plays on Jordan Degoe 1 week and takes him out of the game.
He's deep. He's on his own. He's like a superhero who plays by himself deep. But when that influence is needed around the pill in the middle, that's where Essendon doesn't stack up.
Well, you've put him under the pump, Ando. We've tasked you this week with the pressure list. Heading into round 9 this weekend, and this is going to be weekly from you, so be ready, come prepared. Okay. Who are the three people or clubs that are under pressure heading into this weekend?
I'll be brief, and it's easier to go to the ladder and look at the coaches. So the two coaches for mine are Leon Cameron. Leon Cameron he's been a long-term coach now with GWS, and you're expecting this year to see a top four finish, maybe a premiership. They're a bloody long way off at watching them last Sunday. John Worsfold has to be under pressure, and he'd be the first to admit that. He's been in footy a long time, John Worsfold.
No, he wouldn't. He was on talking.
Oh, sorry, he did, because he's going okay.
He said, no, we're very happy with where we're taking
the club. All right, well, I beg to differ with John. I think that he has to be under pressure. And I'll just throw one up. This name may surprise some. Jared Ruffhead was dropped last week. Isaac Smith was named on the extended interchange bench and put into that VFL Box Hill Hawks side, which is a real slap in the face for Isaac Smith. We're talking vice-captain of the club. He's been a very good player. He's not a great player, but he's a very good player. Triple premiership player, been a great pickup. And he's averaging, he gets around 20, but he's not the player that he was in the last few years. So I'm just saying that Isaac Smith, he's one to keep your eye on.
Well,
can I add one, please? Pretty please. Hey, just a little one. And this is a guy that's making his comeback this weekend. I don't know whether anything's been written or said about this. Jake Lever comes back. Talk about a kid under pressure. This is his second knee reco that he's coming back from. He'll play in the VFL this weekend. He must be in his mind going, I just hope that I don't have the same issue, because three knees would be a disaster for this young person's career. So he's coming back this weekend. Let's hope that the pressure recedes and he gets straight back into the seniors and he's away to go.
Hear, hear.
Yes.
And there's one person who's constantly under pressure. And no one mentions him because he gets mentioned all the time. That's Brendan Bolton.
Yes.
He is just constantly under the pressure umbrella.
Walls, he's staring at him every week.
You've let us in beautifully, Robbo. I'm here to swing the lasso of truth. Now, we need to be short, sharp, just before we catch up with our special guest, Simon Beasley.
Beezer.
You've hit us beautifully there, Robbo, with Carlton. Now, I know you wrote heavily about this in recent days, but a very quick answer from all of you. Should Michael Judashay have come out and responded to Eddie Maguire's comments last week?
Oh, I've got no doubt whatsoever. I rang Mark. He always rings me back. He didn't ring me back for the first time since he became chairman. He knew what it was about. I'm staggered that the club didn't come out and support.
Short and brief, Robbo.
Sorry, Brian. I'm staggered the club didn't come out in support of Brendan. Clearly, at the club, there had to be a meeting and say and tell the coach, this is our strategy. We are not responding. But there's got to come a day where the club and the club president gets up and say, shut up.
Too long.
BT's got you on the clock.
Don't miss me message, though. Don't miss me message.
Yes.
Yes, that's very brief, BT.
No.
Even briefer. There you go. Two letters compared to three.
Just let your club get walked over.
How many do they need to win then for him to keep his job at the end of the year? Ando?
He's not going to get sacked this year. Unless you have games like 2 weeks ago where you get beaten by 10, whatever it ended up being. Does he need to win? I'm getting bored with the win-loss situation for Carlton. And I look at a Carlton supporter near me now, shaking he's nodding his head in agreement.
And crying.
But you've got to start winning games. I mean, you go past being competitive and there's shoots flossing or whatever they do that Bolton talks about. Oh, Lauren, does he keep his job? They've been very, very.
You're going around in circles. It's all about win loss. Two or three wins is not enough for him. That's what he had last year.
Okay.
He's going to take a lot of convincing if he's going to only have two or three wins to go again.
Ando, Robbo, next one for you. We all watch Friday night. Should Essendon have rested Joe Danaher against Geelong instead of Sydney?
No. How's that for beat? How's that for sure?
That's good.
And he
should be rested when he's not feeling well, and I reckon that's probably the decision that determined when he was rested.
Yes.
BT.
Because of Anzac Day, and then we're playing shortly after that, yes.
Yeah, but it was his first few in a row for a very long time, wasn't it? Brian, is encroaching on the protected area worth a 50-metre penalty?
Encroaching on a yes, because it's in the rules.
First time you've got that one.
Because it's in the rules. Take it out of the rules and it's not worth it.
On the rules then, is Don Pike right? Have the rule changes not worked?
To a degree. It's made little impact on the footy. For such major tinkering of the football and the rule changes, I don't think it's brought us the quality of game that we had all hoped and were told it was going to bring.
And
the kicking rule has virtually made no difference.
And as such, you will definitely, in the next 2 years, see kicking backwards brought into the game. No doubt at all that will come into the game.
Let's bring in a rule that says no one can tinker with the rules anymore for 5 years. Let's bring that rule in.
Moratorium.
Very, very quickly, because BT took up a lot of the time on that answering the question. Don Pike, he's quite an interesting character, Don Pike. He comes out and says, oh, God, you know, the 666 is scoring straight up. But Don Pike's instituted a very, very strong defensive game at the Crows after their poor start. They're averaging their lowest points against since the Crows were into the competition. So his team's gone defensive, which means they've lost their scoring. And then he says, oh, it might be 666, which is lowering the scoring. I mean, coaches are doing this, Brian. Coaches are doing it because they are playing safe football because everyone is kicking goals on turnover and clubs are saying, let's not turn over the ball.
Right.
That's the truth. Let's keep going, Oz.
Last one before we get to Simon Beasley on post-climbing and human pyramids. One word from all three of you, because this is a topic that will roll on continually over coming years. Will Buddy see out his contract?
Yes.
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 Oh, we're finally in unison. Fantastic.
It's wide. Beasley needs to mark it. I think he has. Simon Beasley will be on the tightest angle you can imagine. Oh dear, what a finish. The ground is covered in people. Simon Beasley has to kick this to win the game for Footscray. No doubt the crowd getting in his way, and it's going to make it tough. It's going to make it tough for the goal umpire.
How could he make a decision?
Well, he's got it. Here's the kick. Four premiership points are riding on it. I think he's missed it. One point. The Bears have done it.
Well, we're casting our minds back to round 7, 1988. This guy had a shot after the siren. There was a shot after the siren, I should say, to win the game against Brisbane. Simon Beasley from Footscray, talk us through it. The human pyramid. Where do we start?
Yeah, well, it was an unusual day. But anyway, look, I marked it late. Deep in the last quarter, and I went back for the kick, and two Western Australian compatriots, actually, Alex Ashenko, was on the mark, and he hoisted up Mike Richardson. I played with Mike Richardson at Swan Districts, and Alex played, I think, from memory, either East Perth or East Fremantle. So the human pyramid was formed. So they were pretty much up there. It was a bit chaotic because the crowd was on the ground. I mean, there were people everywhere, and the umpires were trying to take control, and one of the umpires is trying to get me back closer to the picket fence and put me on the acute angle. So, look, I mean, it was an interesting situation. I missed the goal marginally, but, you know, it's one of those things that they did change the rule after that about the human pyramid. That was outlawed. So that was, I reckon, about the first time and the last time it was ever used, actually.
I don't think Simon's Robbo here. I actually didn't think there was any police or security at the ground because
it was a flood.
All the supporters just jumped on, And even as you were walking in, I've got an image, I may be wrong, I've got an image of one of your teammates, it might have been Edmund, Jimmy Edmund, grabbing a supporter and throwing him out of the way. Was it Jim?
Well, he wasn't. That's quite right, because as soon as that, when games finished in those days, in the 80s, I mean, the crowd just engulfed the arena. So there were no rules. There were no sort of crowd control rules in place. So, I mean, the crowd were entitled to come onto the ground. I mean, I suppose you would have happened in occasions, blokes kicking for goal after the siren's gone. But, you know, that was an unusual situation. But they were the whole, you know, the basically, there are people everywhere running across the mark. The umpire couldn't control it. So, and the other thing is, people in Melbourne wouldn't pick it up because it's quite dark. It was actually, you know, when the game's finished, they finished in darkness up there a bit. You need to be a bit careful. So I was sort of a bit panicky about just having the kick, getting the kick over and done. So, look, I mean, it was one of those things that we could have got it. The old banana wasn't in the late 80s, so the banana was in, might have been a better chance, but I was pretty, I was on a pretty tight angle there, yeah.
Hey, can you remember the game, how you went?
Look, I actually can't remember. I think I got a few. I went all right at Carrara. I didn't mind it because I spent the whole night at the casino. It was one of the few casinos in Australia the night before. So anyway, one night I stayed up till about 3 a.m. and I ran into the Footscray trainers and I said to the boys, please don't go bloody telling Malthouse or any of the crew, but my PA's just got it up on my screen here.
I've got it.
I reckon it might be Rowan Sawyers. Is that the umpire there arguing with the Bears? The Bear players.
You kicked 7 that day.
Okay, yeah.
And the team kicked 9-17. You kicked 7-1 from 8 kicks.
Of course, he knew that before he ran. I kicked a few. You knew it was 7
kids,
all
the kids were happy. Look at all the Bear kids. They were happy, weren't they? They're very happy.
Well, what about Dane? Was Dane Rampey's act a free kick or not?
Well, I mean, it's a hard one, isn't it? Like, you know, I know the rules there. The rules there, and if the umpire had stuck to the rules, he would have played a free kick to the Bombers. But I saw it on Saturday morning. It's sort of something going across social media, and it was quite amusing. He thought he was a monkey or something trying that bloody goalpost. But anyway, look, it was one of those things. I mean, it could have gone either way. It would have been a pretty brave umpire to take the game off Sydney. He would have needed more than police escort to get off the ground if they'd handed the game to Essendon. But I suppose the rules are there to be adhered to, and I read Robbo's article, and I tend to agree with him a little bit. So they can't just pick and choose which rules they want to put in place and which rules they don't, sort of thing, you know.
Bees, we can never speak, with you without going back to that infamous flight overseas where you took control after some of your teammates became a little bit boisterous on the way to the States, wasn't it? Via Hawaii, was it?
It was, yeah. We were going to Los Angeles via. We went via Nandi, and then Honolulu, and then Los Angeles. That was a very long flight, John.
Just a very quick summation of what took place on the flight.
Well, they got loose on the plane in the first leg of the flight, and they ran out of beer actually on the flight. The second leg of the flight, and. And sort of, it got a bit out of control, and then I think flying between Nandi and Honolulu, I think Tony Bahaj, you got one of the they used to have these things on Qantas, the name of the plane emblazoned, and he took it upon himself to remove it from the wall and put it into his bag. And I think the real problem was when the male hostesses they were spoken to. Unfortunately, by a couple of our players, were a little bit out of control. So the captain of the plane, he came to the rear of the plane when it landed, and he asked us all to remain seated. And he took it upon himself to tell us all that we'd never fly Qantas again. So we did have to make alternative arrangements because we had two nights forced in Honolulu, and then we got a Pan Am flight up to Los Angeles. So it was quite an eventful trip, that's for sure.
Was that Captain Groenewegen?
Captain Groenewegen was involved. Yes, Captain Groenewegen was very involved in the proceedings. But look, it was, you know, the rules and things those days. It was all, you know, it was so different, Johnny. It was funny because I reckon the first person through to me was Darren Hinch's radio station 3AW because they were looking for a spokesman from the Bulldogs, and so they cottoned on to me. And then I had the Willisey brothers, Terry and Mike Willisey, were working on opposing television stations, and I had an interview with both them in the afternoon. So. Yes, it was very interesting.
And back to Robert Groenewegen, and he had got the PA system, hadn't he?
Yes, yes. You know, he commandeered the PA system. I don't know how he worked it out, but words were spoken to the other passengers, which about the state of the flight, and the and that really upset them. That really got them offside.
Well, when you're told you're about to crash, it normally does get you a bit upset. I would have thought.
Well, I don't know whether it was actually in those terms, but he indicated that the plane was going down a little bit. I don't know exactly what he said, but anyway, they were a little bit out of control, the Bulldogs. I mean, they've been nestled up out in the western suburbs, so, you know, 10 or 11 months of the year, and they let off a bit of steam. But anyway, it was very hard to control a mob in that situation, John.
Have you flown Qantas since? Or are you still on a blacklist somewhere in there?
No, I didn't get blacklisted. No one got blacklisted, but the club were threatened, and the VFL, as it was in the 1980s, they sort of took control. I think financially it was a bit of a problem for the club in terms of the out-of-pocket expenses. We had to fly other airlines to get from... we went up Pan Am, and I think we came home on United from memory. So, but there's a lot of press in America about it. The Yanks loved it, so... they were right onto us in the Honolulu Los Angeles leg, which is not a particularly long leg. It's about Melbourne Perth 4 hours sort of thing, and a lot of the other passengers were quite apprehensive about the flight. We left on 6 o'clock on a Saturday afternoon, and the press were there. The American press were covering it big time. And anyway, look, it's one of those things that sort of, you know, it's always brought up. It's always brought up on occasions, but it wasn't good at the time.
Honolulu is an interesting place.
It was good from the point of view that, like, our guys sort of, they settled down a bit. And actually, Mick, I don't know whether Mick stopped in Honolulu. Some of the officials kept going to Los Angeles, got a flight straight away. I think a few of the players elected to stay in Honolulu, and a few of them decided to go on to Los Angeles. So, yeah, they had fun there. Then we were headed for Vegas. We had a bit of fun there, and then it was home.
What about these days, Simon? I know we've got you to cast your mind back to these sort of more infamous incidents, but do you find it's one of those things that, particularly the pyramid, that everywhere you go, it's, you know, everyone seems to ask you about it, or is it just us dredging it up?
Yeah, not really. People don't yet. I mean, the younger generation, really, they wouldn't know me from a cold pie. I mean, when you go to the footy, everyone's young, so they weren't born, or they were just born when I was mucking around in the 1980s. So it's funny, isn't it? It's interesting as you get older and get less known, which from my point of view, is great. But I am asked a little bit about some of the occasions, not so much that one, but the one involving Graham Allen kicking across the goal in Collingwood in 1984, the Western Oval. And he kicked it across the goal, and I marked it. Funnily enough, I was actually playing on Aaron Phillips's father, Greg Phillips, and he had a dicey knee, which I'd worked out he had a pretty dicey knee, and he wasn't going too good in the last quarter, and I cannoned into him, took the mark, and ended up kicking a goal and upsetting all my Collingwood mates. But I'm always asked about that one because that was a very interesting game, yeah.
You obviously watch a fair bit of footy, though. I know you mentioned before that you caught up with Robbo's story about Dane Rampey, so obviously take a pretty keen interest in the game. What do you think of Aaron Norton?
Yeah, I like him. Yeah, no, he's good. He's come along in leaps and bounds this year. It's great. He'll have a lot of pressure on him, I think, going forward. He'll get a lot of attention from the opposition. But, you know, his ability to take a mark in amongst a group of sort of six or eight players is really quite an asset to him. So, tall boy, 6'4", 6'5". He's got an ideal build, and he's a good kick. So, you know, he's got plenty going for him. He'll be a linchpin for us going forward, I hope.
Well, it's been awesome having you with us on the Super Footy Podcast, Simon. Thanks for joining us. I would expect that no one's going to climb a post this weekend, but maybe now that we've brought it front of mind, someone might attempt a human pyramid.
Nice talking to you guys.
Well, the Super Footy Podcast is brought to you by Tab. Always catch up with Jared Daffy. Jared, give us your big three for this weekend.
Well, it's a tough round, Lauren. Well, it is a tough round every week. Only six of the favourites won last week, and that's pretty much in keeping with the way the season has gone. Got a really good game at the Gabba on Saturday, and Brisbane favourites, $1.77. Adelaide, $2.05. Actually, the market went up $1.80 for Brisbane, and they've shortened up already. So pretty good support for them to we'll keep winning at home.
Yeah, Bombers.
Second match. Sorry, go on.
No, Bombers just looking to get back on the winners list, aren't they, after that heartbreak last week?
Yeah, that's quite right. And one thing about this game is that the home side, obviously in this instance Essendon, has won the last seven of these games, and that's understandable. Fremantle, not the best travellers in the world. They're pretty short, though. The Bombers, $1.42. Fremantle at $2.90. We've got a handicap line there of 17.5 points, but it's a game that really both of these sides would be looking to win. You know, we're getting deep into the season now. And the last one, well, it doesn't get much bigger than this, does it? Richmond and Hawthorn. Two wins last week against the odds by both of these sides. We know what happened in the final series last year. Richmond beat Hawthorn pretty comprehensively, and punters have warmed to them early. They're $1.60, so fairly short. And we've got Hawthorn there at $2.35 with a line of 8.5 points.
Now, we always check in on the flag market too. I would imagine with a performance on the weekend, Geelong would have done themselves no harm.
No, they haven't. And, you know, they're going along really, really nicely at the moment. We've got them $3.75 equal favourites with Collingwood, Lauren. And I suppose, to be fair, Collingwood a few question marks after that scratchy win against Carlton last week, but they're wins that they really need to be getting. Behind those two, we've got West Coast back into third favourites at $8. They're on the same line as Greater Western Sydney. Fans have dropped off them this week. They're at $8. Richmond into $9. And the one side that is getting some support, running into form, Adelaide. Although they're outsiders this week, there's money for them this or the last day or two at $15. But currently, Collingwood and Geelong sit atop of that flag betting there at $3.75.
And Brownlow-wise, obviously Gary Ablett and Nat Fyfe led off by Michael Christian, so they're still alive. How's that shaping up?
Yeah, well, this is interesting, isn't it? Patrick Cripps shortens up again. Another loss to Carlton, but maybe three, or definitely two votes there, you would think. So he's into $3.50. Fyfe, well, that might frighten punters away, but he's still second pick there at $5. Lockie Neal, solid at $6. Paddy Dangerfield gets out somewhat. He's out to $7. Bontempelli into $13. And one that has come from the clouds over the last three or four weeks, and he's had a stellar year, Tim Kelly from Geelong. He was big double figures, but he's into $13 now, right in contention to win the Brownlow.
Well, we've been known for our tips here on the Super Footy podcast. Of course, the Jeremy Cameron line earlier in the season. I know plenty have jumped on Twitter and told us that they got on there for the Coleman medal. So we'll definitely keep an eye on all those markets. If you're having a bet this weekend, make sure you do so responsibly. Jared, we'll catch you next week.
Thanks, Lauren.
Righto, just before we let you go, lads, Robbo, what are you hoping to see this weekend?
Oh, Dogs at Cardinia Park. Well, no, we don't call it Cardinia Park. What's it called now? Skilled Stadium?
GMHBA.
Now, everyone gets
I'm old school. I like Cardinia Park.
Yeah, when we the Cats have done well down there with the naming rights. This is a huge game. I think it's one of the best games of the round. The Cats are okay. They beat North last week, and they were okay. The Dogs have got a bit going for them. I'm just trying to work out, Ando, have I got the courage to tip them in Friday's paper? Yep. I don't know yet. I'm probably leaning towards it, but then I start thinking of the Geelong back six. I say, well, how are they going to kick a score? So, yeah, it's a big one. I can't wait for the game, though.
Ando, hoping?
Good games of footy. Not just close games, but good games. I'm talking about the aesthetics of the game, Lauren. I want to say, last 2 weeks I've been disappointed in some of the footy I've seen. Just thought it was fairly scrappy sort of football. I just want to see some open, fast games. So Carlton Collingwood was a good game last weekend.
It was great.
Loved it.
But that type of game, more of them.
I'm hoping to see Richmond fans show Hawthorn that it is possible to turn up at 3:20 on a Sunday.
Oh, yeah, and our colleagues are barrack for Richmond to actually tip them.
That too.
You sort of sneered when you said that. Don't agree with
that? No, I mean, it's one of those things. It is a tough game. Mother's Day. If you're doing 3:20, you can't go out for lunch. You're probably going to miss dinner. It's a little bit too late. But
I got 40.
It's still the Hawthorn fans that didn't turn up. As you say, Perth was packed.
Packed.
Geelong
40,000 in Perth.
Yeah, they're the ones to blame. They didn't go.
That's very aggressive from you, Lauren, to end the show. Well done.
Been great to have you with us for another edition of the Super Footy Podcast. Don't forget to subscribe to us wherever you get your podcasts to make sure we land in your inbox each and every week. Review us, rate us so that others can find us, and make sure you send your questions in via the Twitter machine at Super Footy. Keep up to date at heraldsun.com.au. We'll see you at the game.